One of the things we need on our dream list is training. Training, which I mean like training that will allow as a person comes out of prison to be able to get a skill. And not just that, but opportunities, placement, where after they go through the training, they're placed in the job that they've been trained for and can make a living. If a man can come out of prison and earn his living, it gives him that it builds his self-esteem. It gives him that dignity, that respect, something that he needs to build. Instead of getting out and facing all these obstacles to tear it down, this is something that we need to help build us up.
Welcome to the third and final episode of the three-part season finale of Actual Innocence, a podcast telling the stories of people who've been wrongfully convicted. Thank you so much for your patience in waiting for this episode. Last week, I was gifted bronchitis from the little girls that I babysit, and I was barely able to speak at an audible level. But I'm glad to be back with you this week. I also wanted to let you know that the next episode is going to be a little different. It's going to be a call-in show. You can call from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on January 4th. The phone number will be in the show notes and on social media. That number is 904-452-4763. And if you're calling from outside the U.S. and would like to Skype instead, just send me an email and let me know, and we can arrange a time. I need to start this episode with a huge thank you to Deandra H. for her support on Patreon. She has raised her pledge to a level that warranted a shout-out on the show. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can go to www.patreon.com/actualinpod. This episode is supported by Blue Apron, an amazing meal delivery service. You'll hear me talk about them a little later in the episode, and I encourage you, if you're able to support them. But if you're not, it would be really great if you could send them a little shout out on social media and let them know you appreciate their support for the show. They're on both Facebook and Twitter, and I'll put links to those in the show notes. On the last episode, I mentioned the Innocence Conference, and I would like your support to help Clarence, Calvin, and John get to go. There's still time to do that. The last time I checked with the Innocence Project, we had about $500 of our $1,500 goal. To support them, you just need to text HELPER, H-E-L-P-E-R, to 91999, and then follow the on-screen instructions to choose the amount. Again, that's HELPER, H-E-L-P-E-R, to 91999. These men really will benefit from being able to attend this conference. The last episode left off with us going from identifying issues to identifying solutions. I suggested we make a dream list and ask the question, if we could add anything we want to a list of things that people who are exonerated need, what would we put on that list?
I want to do some dream listing. If we could make a dream list of what we need to do to make these things happen, what would it look like?
Claire, one of the heroes in this story, immediately pulled out her pen and began to take notes. And I gave an example of something that might go on the list.
So what I hear is that healthcare is very important, both mental and physical. So if there was a plan coming out that, you know, day one, you're exonerated, you would need to be covered mentally and physically healthcare, right? That would be on the dream list.
Right. That's one.
And then the list took off on the topic of life skills and support that exonerees would need after being released.
Being falsely convicted and serving time in prison for a crime you did not commit is a trauma.
Let me, could I interrupt you a minute?
Please do.
It's not only the traumatic part of where when you get in court, you know, when that judge say you got life and some for a crime you didn't commit. It's the traumatic part of just being around in there with all type of characters.
Right.
Until now, you don't know this.
Not only that though, but I want some type of way that somebody need to be held accountable for this here. You know, no one ever accountable.
So how do we do that?
How?
Yes.
By holding the system responsible. Why can't we allow the suit? Why can't we be sued for what we went through?
So you want reasonable...
I want to be compensated for what I went through, all the suffering I endured,
you want
what my family endured and stuff.
Standard reasonable compensation.
That'd be fine, yes.
I mean, you can never, ever compensate someone for their
standard
time.
Standard reason,
you can't
that's
pay
it.
Someone
yes.
for their yes. for the time that you have stolen yes. from them, but you want something that's standard and retroactive.
For everyone.
So when someone gets a raise, everybody gets a raise.
Great trick. That's right, for? Yes.
You know, my dream list is, you know, in order to make any of this happen, you know, we need, I dream wish that we can just get some legislatures to just
give us some support.
I think one of the things we need on our dream list is training. Training, which I mean like training that will allow as a person comes out of prison to be able to get a skill. And not just that, but opportunities, placement, where after they go through the training, they're placed in the job that they've been trained for and can make a living. If a man can come out of prison and earn his living, it gives him that it builds his self-esteem. It gives him that dignity, that respect, something that he needs to build. You know, instead of getting out and facing all these obstacles to tear it down, this is something that we need to help build us up. And I truly believe that through that type of training, as one of the things I'm dreaming wish that not everybody, but a very high percentage of people coming out of prison can live successful lives. Because that's one of the main things. Everybody knows that when your finances are hurting your pocket, you have problems. You know, so it creates all kind of problems.
They need a placement coordinator.
Yes.
When they come out of prison, like a job placement, a person who takes care of placing innocent people with agencies, jobs that they have the skills for, who aren't going to...
Well, not so much that they had the skill for, but once they get the training to give them the skills. Well, in prison, you may not get that. When they walk out, this is what we need when we walk out. You can't expect the state of Georgia.
Your age, too, also.
A lot depends on your age, whether you're healthy enough to be able to do it.
Right. Some are going to be younger. But they could use that.
Yeah. But I think in a lot of areas, that would be very beneficial because, for one, when you come out, and like I said, we're facing all the obstacles. Of course, we want to be compensated. We deserve to be compensated. That's no question whatsoever of that. But we also want to be mentally to grow into what we should have been if we hadn't been incarcerated. Because you come out, a lot of people come out. You look back as Clarence say, and you have flashbacks, and you think about when somebody was laying next to you, and the knife was sticking in the middle of the night, and things like that. Or you get a habit where when you sleep at night, you sleep with your shoes on, your boots on, because you never know when somebody might holler. You might have to jump up and be prepared to deal with what's ever going on. And see, these are a lot of things that you're dealing with.
Sleeping with one eye open,
So let me make sure I'm understanding. So after you're exonerated, or after a person is exonerated, they need the opportunity to gain either maybe college or trade school or whatever. After they've mentally and physically healed, they need the opportunity to gain the skills.
Those skills should be available.
To have a successful career.
Right. Yeah. You know, to be their support system, to encourage them, to inspire them, because there's going to be times when they might say, "Hey, you know, this is tough," but they need somebody who maybe they even be a tutor at times.
Yeah.
Then we talked about legal issues that an exoneree might need help with.
I'll tell you another thing here, though, that was unfair is this. There's no one in Georgia ever sued, for punitive damage thing, and we didn't have a resource. When I come out, I wanted to sue because I had counsel in there, and they kept tearing my head, kidney stones or kidney infection. You know, for 2-3 years, what I went through, and it was at the point of death when my kidney burst on me, and, that they had to rush me down there, and when they rush me down, they gonna tell me, you got cancer, you got to go with meeting surgery. I've never been sick in my life, but you tell me I got to go in there and have surgery. Tell me 85% of my kidneys is infected with cancer, and my chances are only 15%. You know, I've been telling y'all for over 2 years that, something went right, but y'all wouldn't treat me for it. So because I wasn't treated, it got worse. But then when I come out and I was released, and I want to file a lawsuit, ain't nobody there, nobody here, to address the issue and the suffering that I endured. And that's why,
Want access to attorney, like an access to an attorney.
I think that we should be, but the statute of limitation of 3 years should not be applied to us, because when it took us 18 years to prove, to get us out, how you going to tell me I got 3 years to prove that they all deliberately intentionally done that?
Okay, let me make sure.
I didn't even know why I was in there. It took me 5 years to find out how you got me in there.
let me make sure I understand. You had kidney issues while you were incarcerated?
Yes.
And then?
I had turned to the count. I had counsel.
Like,
and they took my right kidney.
It was too late for you to go back and get the compensation?
We didn't have attorneys in place because the project was just opening. We didn't have an attorney to go and file a lawsuit, which Amy was, you know, been helping me with. Then when she attempted, the 2-year limitation was there. She said, we might not be filed because the limitation expired. And then after waiting on your conversation, then you said, well, why can't I file against the wrongful conviction? They said, you got to prove deliberate intention. Okay, I hired an attorney with my own money to find out, how did I even get involved in it? To find out how I was deliberate in intention. I was made a suspect. So when I get this evidence, now you're telling me statute of limitation ran out again.
So on your dream list?
So you can't prove anything, you know.
You would like the statute of limitations for things that occurred while you were in prison to not...
It should not affect us, because we all should be entitled to go, that we can prove that y'all delivering with no accidentally sending us to prison, we should be entitled to file a lawsuit. But I'm saying, because that's what I want, you know, and I want, you know, somebody, and they're going to take lawyers to go up there to, you know, fight the legislature about the 3-year statute of limitation.
We then hear some more information from John and Clarence about how getting injured or disabled in prison might prevent someone from getting disability later due to a lack of medical records, which is something I never really thought about.
But I think it's an important issue that you raised, John, and it's also an issue with Clarence of the disabilities, that how when you sustain a disability, either in prison or upon release, how
it
that
affects you. Like we were talking about, I messed my rotator cuff, forming one of the duties in the penitentiary working. Messed my rotator cuff in the show. I broke my knee, microscopic surgery on my knee, torn ligament, something damaged it did. But all this was done while I was performing activity that was required of me while I was in the penitentiary. And, you know, like you said, they should be held responsible for it.
Yeah.
You know,
like workman's comp, I mean.
Right.
But I'm sure you said disability ain't going to accept that because we don't have no medical record since we've been out, because we don't have insurance. You see, but you got to have a medical record built up from out here. And that's not fair. But, you know, because I just filed for disability, trying to get disability where I got hit by the culling thing, you know. And I've been on a cane all the while I was in prison. They were responsible for reading my back with messed up in the throat.
You know, so I think that we should add to the dream list, and tell me if you think this is wrong, but I think appropriate workman's comp, I mean, if you're working and you are hurt or disability, and also maybe if you don't pay into Social Security and so you're not going to get that benefit, a pension. I mean, if you're exonerated and you're not going to get Social Security, then an appropriate pension in place of that.
I wanted to add a humorous side note that I noticed as I was editing this audio. The sound that you hear that's similar to paper rustling is actually the sound of Rolos being opened. I learned once in a psychology class that putting candy or something for someone to eat on the table during a meeting helps people, like me, to focus. The reason for the next clip is that I want you to hear the atmosphere in the room. John, Calvin, and Clarence have shared some really emotional experiences. And though it's not on tape during the break, Clarence stands up and says, wow, I feel great.
Those cups are over there if anybody else would like an actual innocent souvenir cup.
We've been working on that.
It's Rolos. That's
Rolos.
Rolos.
Ooh.
That's the best
one. Oh, yeah.
After our short break, Claire read the results of the dream list.
The dream list is healthcare, mental and physical, standard compensation that is uniform and retroactive, with the ability to sue separately if there are intentional bad acts on the part of the state, with either no statute of limitations or a statute of limitations that is triggered by learning of the bad acts, housing assistance, transportation assistance, anything from donated vehicles to a MARTA card or public transportation assistance, job training and education opportunities upon release from prison, as well as teaching life skills and job skills, hopefully working with a job placement coordinator, and then help getting a job through that placement coordinator. Perhaps a guidance counselor that can help assist with various different accessing different social services and things on the outside. And workers' compensation, ability to access workers in lieu of workers' compensation because you haven't been employed, because you've been in prison, the option for a pension if you were injured.
Then we heard from the other side of the table, and the volunteers shared the solutions that they might have for some of the issues.
So at the Georgia Innocence Project, a couple weeks ago, I don't even know how long ago it was now.
Can you say your name so we yes. can talk to you when you're...
Sorry, my name is Melissa Ahrens. And I wanted to kind of get a round table together, and we have been trying to make Georgia Innocence Project more efficient, and so we were just able to purchase a donor database, which is also a volunteer database. And so we're able to capture volunteers quite easily now, and with their interests and their professions and what their, just what their professions are. And so I was able to identify some area resources. So a forensic psychologist, a counselor, a former executive director, and just to kind of, get together. And I think that what we found was just to trying to pull resources together, like who knows who. And, for example, for the health issue, if we're going to start with that, I know that one of our exonerees, or, all of them upon release, they needed a dental checkup.
I need it.
And you don't even, I don't think about it, but that's what they need is a dental checkup. And so we have identified an organization that does either gives free or very, very reduction on, mouth health. So
many of us that are in the field at some point in time, we do work pro bono.
Yes.
That's just our service to the community. And LPCA is for the entire state of Georgia. So as you were saying, not just here in Atlanta, but maybe some kind of way partnering with LPCA to say we have individuals who have needs and who want these services, and just put it out there. They'll send an email about any and everything else. So sending an email to say, hey, we have someone in this area who's interested in counseling. Is there anyone who's available or willing to provide these services? And I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I would imagine that people are going to step up they're trying to make a living as well. But, one pro bono client is, that's your service.
And as a mental health care provider myself, I can tell you sometimes it's much more rewarding personally to give a service to someone for free who wants the service than to give the service to someone paid who's forced to be there.
Right.
Exactly.
I was thinking that I know some schools, like interns, some schools have clinics, like counseling clinics, where their interns work and they're supervised. So that might be another avenue as well.
And as the interim director here, one thing that is especially appealing to me about all of this, given that we have this sort of crushing backlog of cases and very limited resources, is the idea of a guidance counselor. Like maybe, we identify certain individuals who are committed to offering a good chunk of time to pair up with an exoneree who can be, the person that makes sure that all of these issues are addressed and everything, so that it's not all so that we've got channels of communication going on.
If we were in Hollywood, we would call it a life coach, right?
Right, exactly. Life coach, that's what we need to call it. Would you like a life coach, Clarence? Me too.
No, I was going to say that reminds me of what John said about Margaret when he came in, that she was an integral part of, you know, just his transition back, you know, because you need help with navigating new processes, learning how to pump gas, wondering why people are standing out in front of the Apple store, you know, just, you know, little things that we just take for granted every day because we see them, but... they could be mysterious.
If you could get, you know, volunteers to be someone's life coach, that would be an amazing to help set them up with everything on the dream list, the dream life coach.
Right. Because some of this can't be legislated. There are such individual cases that we need to think about them individually.
Well, I think the job training and job placement is an important and interesting thing to talk about, and maybe you can talk about that a bit, Margaret.
I just think that each individual needs someone to help him navigate all of that, and John, you were so good at helping me maintain a plant out in the front office. I thought this guy should have gone to botanical training or something, you know, but I think each individual needs to be assessed by someone, a coach, a counselor, someone, to help him find a way that might be enjoyable as a life work.
The solutions that these helpers came up with were amazing, and I hope they're able to gain enough financial support to enact them. I get emails every week from people asking me how they can help, and this is it. You can volunteer your time, volunteer your money, write to a local Innocence Network agency and ask them what it is that they need. Write to your local legislator and support rights for exonerees. You can use your voice to do whatever it is you feel comfortable doing. But please, be a helper. Before we move on to the second half of our show, I need to talk about our newest and most delicious to date sponsor, Blue Apron. I'm so thrilled that Blue Apron has become a sponsor and that I'm now using their service. Not only because of the fresh ingredients and that it's the number one recipe delivery service in the United States, but also because it's going to help me with my New Year's resolution to cook at home and eating foods from sustainable sources. I mean, Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the United States. Blue Apron can be delivered to 99% of the continental U.S. and 99.5% of food deserts. And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for the recipe, they're reducing food waste. I know that I eat out a lot, and this is not only going to help me with that New Year's resolution to eat fresh, but also now I can spend under $10 for a delicious meal. Some of the upcoming meals include pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion rice and spinach, and mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. It sounds delicious. I just placed my first order, and it was so easy. I can't wait for my food to arrive. It took under 5 minutes to complete the process. I was able to customize the recipes that I wanted, and there's no commitment, so I only get the deliveries when I want them. I especially like that it's guaranteed, because Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in my delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. So, check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/actual. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/actual. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. In the previous 2 episodes, I played part of my conversation with Kevin Flynn from the Crime Writers On and the These Are Their Stories podcast. I asked Kevin to come on the show to help me process the direction that my show is taking and to make sure that I'm still accomplishing what I set out to do with Actual Innocence. Well, Here's the final installment of that conversation.
All right, let's get to brass tacks. How long do you want to do this podcast for?
Forever.
Not this episode, but your podcast, yeah.
Well, both forever, but...
I can't do forever myself, but you can... Yeah, eventually you're going to have to upload it to iTunes and Stitcher.
Okay, well, I have a question for you before we're done.
Okay.
And it's going to be about what I say next.
All right, you just were evasive, but I'm going to let you get away with it right now.
No, I'm going to answer your question, okay. And then I'm going to ask you one.
All right, ask me.
At least I have plans through next year. I mean, in my head, I don't have it all written out yet. I have a really great spreadsheet. I'm great with spreadsheets. But I want to do a long-form episode at the beginning of next year about someone who is currently incarcerated and then see where it goes. But... I mean, I guess I wanna keep going as long as people wanna keep listening.
Mm-hmm.
But my question for you is: it is my impression from listening to your podcast that you hate when non-reporters do long-form stories like
no,
that.
No. That's not
okay.
It. No, what I amateur sleuthing can
okay.
be very annoying to me, and not for the fact necessarily because there's some real chutzpah to be like, oh well, these 100 professionally trained detectives couldn't solve this case. I will. I've never done anything like this, so I'm just going to get in my Volkswagen and drive. You know, that's – and unless you can deliver the goods on that, if you can, then that's a fantastic story that you did that. But a lot of these are done, and we're in the middle of it, and we don't – we're like, is there going to be a resolution? And then when there isn't, you're just kind of like, well, no, duh, of course there wasn't because – you know, there wasn't one to be had. So, no, I don't mind that, like, people who aren't – classically trained journalists attempt this. I think that that the mistake that they make is to go too soon on air with it if they're trying to, say, solve something. If they're just trying to tell somebody's story in, you know, in a different way, then, you know, I think you can put that together and be done. Now, if you think about season 2 of Undisclosed, where they're looking at Joey's case, they did a year's worth of research ahead of time and then prepped, you know, a lot of the shows. And they know where it's going. They know where it's going to end. And they knew that when they started. You know, unlike Serial in some ways and unlike the first season of Undisclosed. So if you have an idea where it's going to go and your goal is to tell this unnamed person's story, that's one thing. If your goal is to set out and then dig up something that's going to get them exonerated, then you're not going to get that done in 2017,
right?
If at all. You know, and I may be wrong, but you know, think about Making a Murderer. They sat on that film for almost 10 years. And I think one of the reasons was, I think they were still waiting for something to happen, like, you know, a conviction getting overturned. And eventually it was like, oh, well, Serial's on. People, there's this demand for this, and so let's finish this up. It took 3 Paradise Lost movies before the West Memphis 3, but, you know, before those kids went free. So, you know, I'd say you, first of all, don't not do it because I'd say, you know, that it's a mistake.
No.
But, you know, that's my advice, is that it depends on the format. I think that the ones that are better positioned are people who have been trained and do that and have a lot of resources. They're part of a newsroom and they can say, well, I'm, you know, I've got a way to get to Chicago to do this interview. And while I'm there, Laura, can you start doing research on tasers or whatever the heck I need to be done? Because I can't be in 2 places.
Right. No, actually, and that was my question. How can I make it not suck? Actually, it's funny. I asked Rebecca, I said, is there some kind of class or lecture that you know of that I could take to learn how to make a long form type podcast? And she's like, no. She's like, people who do those are experienced journalists, and you just have to tell the story that you would want to hear.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I do a long form episode, it will be different in the fact that it'll come from the social work perspective. It won't come from an attorney perspective or a reporter's perspective. And I wouldn't do a story without having everybody on board. So, like, I have the attorney on board. I have the person who's incarcerated on board. I think that I'll have a lot of cooperation rather than spending my time searching and hunting down people to talk to.
Is your goal to tell his story, or is your goal to find a way that he gets out and you facilitate that?
No, my goal is not to exonerate him because that's not something that's in my power. I've made an outline and I put a question at the top of the page. And the question that I wrote was, is he innocent? Did he do it? And so I think that I guess my story will be, I mean, I believe he is, but I want to prove it. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I want to get that message out there. This is why I think he's innocent. So I guess I just want to answer the question, is he innocent and why?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think you could do that. Now, I mean, I think like anything else, you study the ones that are good and try to make mental notes about what made them good. And then the ones that like didn't do it, where did they go wrong? Because they didn't have a clear resolution. Yeah, a lot of them, Serial season one didn't have a clear resolution, but it was still fantastic because of the other thing, because of the storytelling and because of the intimate nature of the relationship between Sarah and Anand. And in the end, on our show, come to agree that Serial season one is not about Anand. It's about Sarah and Sarah's journey.
Right.
In this case, she was Nancy Drew and Veronica Mars and Kinsley Malone or whatever her name is from the A is for Alibi. You know, it's all that all rolled up in a one. So you should go back and look. Now, I mean, I'm not saying, well, go have a very intimate telephone conversation with this inmate and make Serial redux. But find out what you liked about this podcast and that podcast, and did they do a good job with pacing and the music and where they were going the whole time? And what did they bring? Did they just tell the same story week after week, or did they advance the story? So there's no masterclass other than listening to stuff that was good and learning from the stuff that wasn't.
No, I think that you're right. And I think that, I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but lately I've listened to a lot of long form podcasts in anticipation of doing this show. And I think that I hope that I'm listening to the good ones. I'm listening to ones that I like. I mean, if I don't like it, I don't listen. So I think that they have given me some tips.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And that's, I think that's the way you should proceed. Is if there's something in it that you liked and inspired you, then take those lessons and try to apply them to your storytelling. So I think I was asking you about like how long you want to do this podcast and whether or not, did you ever feel like with all this other stuff, you know, the pushback that you get from people who don't like your podcast that like you want to quit?
Yes. But then usually when I get downhearted, I will listen to one of my stories or, you know, I'll do another interview or someone will email me with a positive email. You know, you really are making a difference. I actually have a few volunteers who help me with my show. You know, they help with lots of different aspects, you know, make phone calls or help me schedule interviews, whatever they can do. And I think that it's really inspiring because all of these volunteers have emailed me and said, you know, you're not an attorney, I'm not an attorney, and you've inspired me to want to help people. So what can I do? A lot of people will email me and say, you know, I live here. Can you help me figure out where I can volunteer? So, I mean, I usually tell them I'm not an expert, but you can contact your local Innocence Network agency. So I think that when I want to quit, I mean, my listeners are so amazing that generally I'm able to turn that around.
Yeah, I don't see, you know, a need for you to think that it's not worthwhile. I can understand being discouraged because of X, Y, or Z, because there's a lot of things that can happen when you are in a media business like podcasting and you are sort, you know, you're going from week to week, month to month on content and things come up. And whether that means that, you know, you lose a big sponsor or your audience drops for some reason or bounces back really high. I mean, those are things that are hard to control. If tonight is your last episode, I mean, you still have accomplishments that you, and those are them. Where you've inspired people to take action.
I think that just helped me answer my question for the whole reason for asking you to do this interview to make sure that my podcast is doing its job and that I'm doing my job is people do email me and tell me that they're inspired and they want to help.
Are you doing your job?
I think so.
And again, I think that part of you, and I'll just tie a bow on this, part of you it sounds uncomfortable with the financial reality of putting on the podcast that you have sponsors and that somehow that makes it unsavory to other people. Does it make it unsavory to you?
No, because I know the expense behind podcasts and how many hours goes into every 45-minute episode. 45 minutes of my show probably means I spent, you know, 20 hours on it.
Oh, yeah.
Including the interview and all that at least.
So. Oh, it's yeah, usually it's like an hour for every 10 minutes is a good rule of thumb. You know, as far as editing and stuff. Even just straight, you know, just taking ums and ahs and stuff out of interviews. Not even like adding music and all the other things. You know, just trying to pick out the best parts. So, yeah, it is a big time suck. And I don't know your audience size and your CPM rate and all this other stuff, but you're not making tens of thousands of dollars on each episode.
No.
So, but even if you were, because that'd be a reflection of your audience and the support that sponsors want to give you, would that somehow be bad? Would that change your view of it?
I don't think so. No, probably not. Because, you know, if I were making tens of thousands of dollars, I could make more episodes and I could fly and make better quality episodes. And I think that that's part of the reason for sponsors, too, is I always want to improve the quality. So I feel like getting better equipment or getting more training or going to a conference to learn how to do things better is where I need to put some of the sponsor money, I guess. And so I feel like when I get an email from someone saying, you know, I don't like that you have sponsors, it's disheartening because the reason I have sponsors is because I'm trying to make the show better.
Hey, did you get more than one email or is it just you just got one email from somebody who...
Well, I got one really nasty email, but I've gotten more than one comment.
Well, you know, again, if you don't have, if there's no money, there's no mission. Nonprofits need to bring in money in order to do stuff. The lawyers that are working for these clients need to be paid so that they can put food on the table. All the other news organizations that cover these cases. I mean, it just to feel like you should be doing this out of the goodness of your heart is not realistic for someone to expect, and it's not sustainable if you wanted to do that.
Right.
You know, I mean, you could do a couple of episodes and you can do them sporadically, but you can't do what you're doing unless you're getting paid. And so I think maybe I'm not the one to say it, but I'm going to give you absolution for having the audacity to make any sort of money in the United States for your hard work.
I appreciate that.
You know, it's fine. You have sponsors. You know, I'd be more worried about who your sponsors are. That's more what we worry about. We're like, oh, we won't do anything where, you know, it's sports betting or something like that. Now, right. We have somebody come on our podcast. They sell bras. They're going to be on our Law & Order podcast. These are their stories, which you can find on iTunes and Stitchers and everything. You know, but, you know, it's like, okay, I'm certainly not against bras. I'm not the right person to read the ad. I just think, you know, I was just struck by that because I see that's sort of one of these, like, low-blow arguments that are just like someone, it's just too easy to say, oh, it's, I would be in like a lower level of hell because, you know, I've written true crime and that's the case. We're talking about the focus is somebody's murder. And I try to work with the family and stuff, but still there are people think you're exploiting this dead girl or this dead guy's life and it's blood money. And that's not how it is. It just shows how little you know about what it is we do. So again, absolution. I mean, don't worry about that. You're doing the thing that you want to do. You're doing it in the manner that you'd like to do, and that if you can get a little more financial help and make this at all profitable where you can maybe hire some help that will do whatever for you, research, set up interviews. Maybe that means for this really super interview, paying to get somebody into a professional studio, you know, at $120 an hour or whatever. You know, just to satisfy the snotty college kid who says the sound quality isn't good. Like, well, you know, the guy doesn't have a phone. I mean, what do you want?
Right.
Then you can do that. So don't I feel like I got to give you this pep talk. Like, your show's good. People want it. Don't listen to the haters.
I appreciate that. I really wish you would be my life coach, but since you've declined, I'm just going to have to listen to this over and over again.
Well, you don't need a life coach. I mean, I think you already know what you need to do. Right? I'm not like, you know, Oz didn't give the Tin Man what he didn't already have.
That's true. And
yeah, that's from the America song, by the way. People know that. You're probably too young. Yeah, you're probably too young to.
Yeah, I've never heard it.
But you already knew this. These are things you already knew.
Right.
And you just needed someone else to tell you that to stick with this.
Right. And I think that's it. I needed this conversation of hearing someone else say, you know, it's okay to have sponsors. It's okay to have haters because, you know, they're not your audience. I think everything that you have said sunk in more since you've said it, and you're the one who said it, because I think that for some reason I hold you in a high regard in the podcasting.
I don't know why, but
I think it's just that I value your perspective on
it. I appreciate
things.
That. Thank you. Thank you. But again, I'm not telling you anything that you don't already know, and I'm not telling you anything that your listeners aren't going to be telling you over the next week through email and on Twitter. The reason you have an audience that's large enough to be monetized in the first place is because they enjoy what you are providing and they understand the value of that. And so once they know that you've sort of been like, gosh, I don't know if what I'm doing has been making a difference, and because somebody from their mom's basement tweeted at me something mean, maybe I'm in the wrong line of work, or let me just say maybe I got the wrong hobby. You know, I think I'm asking, hey, you guys, this is Brooke's podcast. You've subscribed to Brooke's podcast. You've been with her since maybe the beginning. She's feeling like maybe she's not doing the right thing, or she's going about it the wrong way. Why don't you reach out to her? Tell her what you think. Now, maybe there are people who actually have some constructive criticism. Give it to her constructively. She might take it. It might be a way to, you know, get the podcast better. Every podcast can be better. But, you know, just don't listen to the journalism student who's like, just shut the fuck up. And go, you know, go to the quad and play hacky sack and then come back to me after you've had a real job, you know. Go catch a Pokemon and try not to get hit in the crosswalk.
Right.
So, what's the future for your podcast?
I think what you said has made a lot of sense, that this is my show, and I feel good about the way that it's been going. I mean, I feel like I don't compromise any of my morals in the way that I present the stories. And as long as I have people listening, I'm going to keep doing it.
Right. And I think the takeaways are, it's technically challenging because there's a lot of DIY to what you're doing, and you're aware of that, and you're trying to address it. We have the same problems, you know, when it comes to us getting guests on. You know, and I'll tell you, I wanted this to sound as good as it could, so we're using, you know, our system here at the Partners in Crime just so we can make it sound as good as possible. It's always a struggle when I'm in my basement and you're in your bedroom here and we're trying to make this sound like the BBC. I think everybody's aware that everybody out there knows. Nobody wants to talk about the labor pains. They don't want to hear about the labor pains. They just want to see the baby. But tonight we're talking a little bit about the labor pains. Right? Sure. They get it. You're going to work on that. But the important thing everybody should focus on is not whether or not, you know, you can make out the bass tones in somebody's voice while they're telling you about the 10 years they spent behind bars because somebody faked a fingerprint analysis. You should focus on the story. And that everything else about what you're doing is good. You know, it's like you talk about people who have been exonerated and have been let free. Well, I think that you need to let yourself go free. You need to liberate yourself, because you're in a prison cell yourself with an open door. So just step out the door.
After I had my talk with Kevin, but also through the support of emails, donations, and social media, I'm so proud to be a part of this show. In just a minute, you'll hear the credits. But be sure to stay tuned afterwards to hear some sound waves from listeners. Just a reminder, you can support the exonerees and help send them to the Innocence Conference by texting HELPER, H-E-L-P-E-R, to 91999. I'm Brooke. Thank you so much for listening.
You can discuss the justice system in the Actual Innocence Facebook group. Just search for Actual Innocence on Facebook. You can support the Actual Innocence podcast by visiting our website at www.actualinpod.com and clicking on the support tab. We want to thank today's sponsor, Blue Apron, for supporting the show and invite you to support them by visiting blueapron.com/actual. You can help John, Calvin, and Clarence attend the Innocence Conference by dialing HELPER. That's H-E-L-P-E-R to 91999. Or visiting the link in the show notes. The Actual Innocence podcast is hosted and produced by Brooke Giddings, and the Actual Innocence volunteer team is Megan Delaney, Sarah Nelson, and Casey Sanders. The executive producer is Dennis Robinson, and our theme song is by Andy Cohen. Until next time, listen, learn, and advocate for justice. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Brooke. This is Cameron from Maine, and I wanted to say that Actual Innocence has helped me learn a lot about the human element of these exoneration stories. I had no idea that people who were exonerated largely didn't receive any services upon release. And you can't really appreciate the impact on their lives must be until you hear someone say it, you know, talk about it. And then you hear the same sort of themes over and over again of, having poor lawyering or an overworked lawyer, loss of family and relationships, and just losing large chunks of your life and then being dumped back on the street with no real help. So I really appreciate what your podcast has done, and I hope it continues forever, telling these stories and educating people about what life is truly like.
Hi, my name's Albert. I'm assuming this is always a voicemail line. I would hate to find out that I'm calling you at like, you know, quarter after midnight Eastern time. Anyway, I'm a big fan of the podcast. I basically was just listening to the newest installation and just had to call you before I even finished it. A lot of the things that the Crime Writers On guy tells you or the ways in which he's guiding, you know, your thoughts, I think are completely correct. As far as the criticisms, you know, these seem to be more fears of, concerns of yours, and if, you know, maybe even one person mentions them, you know, that's, I'm sure, a vast minority. There's always going to be dissenters and like the woman of, you know, that won't listen to your show because you have ads now. I mean, this isn't like, you know, the punk rock 80s where anybody that did anything commercial was a sellout. You know, that's ridiculous. I used to think that, in the 80s when I was punk rock. And, you know, the only question I would have for her is, well, she either is independently wealthy or she works for a living, which means she has some concert with a capitalist corporation, which means she takes money from someone. So why is it okay for her to do that and not anyone else? It's hypocritical. I used to have problems with the audio in some of your episodes, and I kept listening, even though, you know, I try to listen to podcasts on like double speed, and on double speed, sometimes I had trouble hearing what the exonerees were saying. But I didn't give up. I kept listening, and sometimes I was hoping you would kind of like just repeat what they said or whatever. And over time, either that didn't happen anymore, or I didn't care because I like the podcast too much. Either way, it's not an issue anymore. I'm not even sure why. And finally, in terms of your effect, I think one of the most important things that you're doing and the strongest effects of your podcast, I think, would be in terms of bringing to people's attention not just that there are people who get wrongfully convicted, because there are other podcasts that seem to be doing that, but I don't think there's another podcast out there that sheds as much light onto the difficulty that exonerees have once they get out of prison. And it's really embarrassing, and I feel really bad for those people that they have to endure that with very little or no help from the state, with no help and very little money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's a huge, huge thing. And I don't hear that from any, or hear that very rarely from the other podcasts relating to, to the criminal justice system.
Hey, Brooke, Stacy calling you. I met you at one of the meetups in Georgia. I just wanted to let you know you're doing an amazing job to go from someone who didn't know that there were false arrests and imprisonment to doing something about it. And I think you're doing a lot about it. And screw the haters and the people who don't want to listen because you have sponsors. I mean, that's just not even realistic to say something like that. That's for people that are just haters. I mean, we know you have to live. And anyway, I think your show is wonderful. I think this last thing where you had everyone together and you're trying to figure out the problems of the exonerees is really constructive. And I think you're doing amazing. And I think you're doing more than you should be. And don't keep second-guessing yourself. Screw the haters. Just think of your podcast as everyone else is listening naked and you're just talking, like they say when you're on a show. Anyway, I could ramble, but I just want you to know that I think you're doing an amazing job, and so do tons of other people. So be proud, be happy, and get sponsors as you need them, and do what you got to do. But don't quit the podcast. Have a great day. Bye.